Now it's our turn to, sorry for the words, but put our balls on the table.
Remember, kids, this is not how you play hockey. It's just ugly.
I like it.
Screw you guys. I'm doing this.
You know what? I love ice cream, too.
Go back to Canada, Guy Lafleur.
Game on!
Yeah, game on.
Hello, and welcome into another episode of The Hockey Show right here on Mile High Sports. JJ Jerez, Ryan Boulding of NHL.com. Ryan Boulding, smelling salts are cracked. Game one of the Stanley Cup Final in the books, awaiting game two tonight. Such exciting times here around Denver. Actually getting to live it, getting to be a part of the Stanley Cup Final. I mean, I don't know about you, Ryan, but this is hands down the highlight of my media career.
It's exciting. It's thrilling to be the center of the hockey universe for at least two games here so far.
Right. Getting to rub shoulders with national pundits, with Canadian national pundits, some of which I've never really known much about before. One of which being Ken Weep, who will be joining us in segment two of the show. Segment one, we'll have Jesse Montano.
Montano.
Yeah, we said the same thing.
Okay.
but yeah, we got a lot to break down. One series left. And like I said, one game in the books. Of course, we got to start our show like we always do with the matinee money pick. No matinee games today, just one game tonight, 6 p.m. So I got a couple picks that I'm going with there. I think the under is going to be a good take in this game, mainly because what we saw out of that game one, especially that first period, right? I think you'll expect Tampa Bay to play a much tighter, a much better game than they showed in the first period of game one. And aside from the first period, Tampa Bay played a pretty solid game. So I think that was a little bit of them getting their feet wet. Andrei Vasilevsky's not going to be nearly as leaky, but I also think the Avalanche are going to be able to close things off and make some of their own adjustments as well. We're going to see a much more defensive game tonight, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you. I expect more defense. I expect guys trying to find opportunities to find more space to create. And
is it that hard for you to just say, I agree with you?
I
have to go double negative on me?
I was also going to say, it's just so unpredictable. I don't know how to go into the series. Like, maybe after two games, we'll have the best idea of how things are settling in. And we can get into it more, but I just, like, going into game one, I felt like I can't comfortably put money on this. Not that you can comfortably put money on anything ever, but as up and down as hockey can be, the Stanley Cup final is like a giant question mark still at this point, I think.
Well, and that's what makes this matchup between these two teams so fantastic, right? Nobody really knows what to expect. It really is anybody's cup. Even the Avalanche up 1-0 in the game count right now, I don't think anybody has counted Tampa Bay out of the series. Not even close.
They're way too crafty and experienced to be down and out at this point, right? I think game one is an important game, but as we've kind of seen, at least on the Western Conference side, game two can be as important or more important in how the series goes.
We know how important Cale Makar and just the defensive group as a whole are to the Avalanche production and their offense, right? They're always generating shots from that blue line. Well, in game one, Cale Makar had zero shots on goal. So I'm looking at Cale Makar as well over on the shots on goal, 2.5. It's minus 170, so it's something you might have to hit hard, but I think they're going to figure out a way to get Cale Makar's pucks to the net. I mean, he credited Tampa Bay a ton with how much they block shots, and coming into the series, I definitely saw Tampa Bay being able to game plan and maybe shut Cale Makar down a little more like we saw in St. Louis over what we saw in Edmonton. So I don't think there's a surprise there. I'm a little weary of him being able to get three shots, but considering he had zero in game one, I'm feeling good about him getting at least three tonight.
I think his pairing with Devontaeves had like seven attempts. So it wasn't like he wasn't shooting either.
Right.
Like you said, clogging lanes, blocking shots. Tampa's made a big commitment to blocking shots. I think even going back to round two in the Blues series, you saw in the game St. Louis won sort of a recommitment to blocking shots that created some problems for the Avalanche. And when you've got potent guys on the blue line firing pucks, yeah, you're going to want to block those shots. But even then, I mean, the game-winning goal in game one comes as a result of a block shot, right? The puck just comes right back out. So I think Makar talked about it a little bit yesterday where he talked about, just taking your chances. Even John Cooper said it's not going to be possible to keep him off the shot count all series.
Right, but no surprise there considering Tampa Bay's commitment to defense and defensive structure, right? So We'll see how things develop. But yeah, like you said, I'm not really super confident in either of those picks, but I had to pick something. And those are the ones I like the most. We noticed how the top line, and especially Gabe Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon, those two guys typically have quite the impact against Tampa Bay. So, you know, if you're looking for some other prop bets to throw in there, maybe look at something involving those two. But let's get into hockey. Let's get into some X's and O's. How fun has the series been so far? I mean, just one game hits an overtime. But I think, you know, especially from an impartial point of view, that was about as good of a product that you can have in the Stanley Cup final, especially when you look at last year when Montreal really had no business being there.
It was definitely a game where you thought, oh, are the Avalanche going to do what they've done to every team out in the West? Oh, no. Tampa's way too wily. It's the type of game where you're really, you know, I've been saying this a lot of the playoffs. I don't know why I bet against Tampa initially. And there's a reason why they have gotten to this point. And so I don't even know that they're done if they were down 3-0.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ever count them out. They have the experience. But I think what we saw in game one was obvious, a little bit of them getting caught off guard by what Avalanche can throw at them, speed-wise, talent-wise, right? Especially that first period. Avalanche got 3 goals in that first period, and that's when Tampa Bay was like, all right, we've arrived. This is Colorado. We got to tweak some things to make sure that they're not flying past us like they did there in that first period. So that being said, I don't know if Tampa Bay has in their tool belt the adjustments necessary to keep this Avalanche offense at bay. I mean, I think you saw that third period in game one, and that's what I expect this game two to look a lot more like, you know, a lot tighter, a lot less goals. But at the same time, the Avalanche were generating offense. The Avalanche were generating shots. Meanwhile, Tampa Bay was getting hemmed in their defensive zone. They weren't able to generate shots for a long stretch of time. So it just feels like the St. Louis series where, yeah, Tampa Bay might be able to keep you at bay a little bit, might be able to play some good defense. But at the end of the day, I feel like Colorado is just too potent for them to hold off for 60 minutes.
There's a little bit of weathering the storm for sure. I think they, at least recently, the Avalanche have been scoring in bunches too, right? So there's a couple of moments where it's like a 1-2 punch to the face. They score one, they get another one real quick, and then you're in a bit of a hole as a team. But we saw in game one, Tampa work their way out of a deficit. We've seen in this postseason, Tampa work their way out of a series deficit. I think there is a degree of feeling out where, you know, both of these teams want to affect their game on and their will on the other team. And Tampa got a taste of that. And I think the big shock for them was just Colorado's speed on the forecheck. I've been noticing this all the way through the postseason, in particular with St. Louis, because I thought that was the real matchup for the Avs.
Yep.
out of the Western Conference. And just a lot of teams didn't have time and space to break out and really get going. I even think in the first period, Tampa maybe had 3 breakouts where they controlled the puck through the neutral zone into a zone entry. Like, they did not look very good. They were struggling to get out of their own zone. There's a lot of opportunities. One of those resulted in a goal against. So I think that's kind of where Tampa's at. Like, we know now what they bring, and we got to try and equalize it a little bit, right? They got to get out of their zone quicker. They got to play the body a little harder. And I actually think they did a real good job. If you watch the way that they move through the neutral zone, and in particular, the way that they move on the power play, you know, there's a lot more passing. Sometimes it feels like they're like the Harlem Globetrotters, the way that they're passing and do drop passes and kind of like stop passes. So they're figuring out a way to get through what the Avalanche does, but ultimately it's going to come down to doing that quicker.
Yeah, I think one thing that they really did well, and the Avalanche were fortunate to only give up 1 goal on this, was the backdoor pass, and especially Nikita Kucherov. He somehow has such an eye for that back door that when nobody's expecting it, nobody sees it, he finds somebody all alone ready for the tap in, and that's how they scored on one goal there. But yeah, absolutely. In game one, you essentially saw 3 different stories, right? The first period was Colorado, the second period was Tampa Bay, and the third period was a mixture of both. Again, what I anticipate tonight to be more like.
Yeah, it's exciting to have a Stanley Cup final. I mean, game one goes into overtime. It was a quick overtime, but I mean, that's a good hockey game. That's mm-hmm. a game with storylines. It's a game with drama. You know, not very bland. It was good.
Yeah, and amazing from Colorado's standpoint to not having been here before, not having that Stanley Cup experience, being able to keep that even keel mindset and finish the game off early in overtime, not making it go too long, which they've done all playoffs long. They've only lost one overtime game. The other ones that they've played, they kind of took care of pretty quickly.
Yeah, and Tampa's played the Avs three times now, and they were 0-1-1 with an overtime game there. So they know what to expect. And tonight, I expect Tampa to be a little bit tighter. You know, they had some guys. They had Braden Point returning to the lineup for the first time since Game 7 against since May 31st, since Game 7 against Toronto. And then Brandon Hagel, you know, was he going to play? Wasn't he going to play? He played, you know. So I think, you know, there's some guys kind of shaking the rust off, whereas the Avs maybe, you know, poured it on early and then had to battle through a little bit of rust, 8 days off before games. So this game, I expect to be a lot tighter.
And with that, sounds like Andrew Cogliano is a possibility for tonight. First time we've seen him since the Edmonton series. How's this fit in the lineup? Do you think he jumps right in? Is Jared Bednar in love with this guy's abilities that he's got to put him in right as he's ready to go? I mean, it looks like he's 100%. I know he's had the hand injury, but what we've seen from him the last couple days, he's not holding anything back. You can basically count that hand injury as healed now.
Yeah, medicine and painkillers are amazing things, right? But he had surgery on a hand or a finger. I think the general consensus among media speculators is a finger surgery. You have to guess that it's a non-important finger, right? Maybe it's a knuckle or maybe top of the hand or something where he can grip a stick, he can still pass, he can still poke check, he can still kill penalties. Probably not taking faceoffs, though. He's likely playing alongside Nico Sturm, who's a good faceoff man, be taking draws there. I expect him to be in the lineup, and that makes the Avalanche's penalty kill, which went 3-for-3, much better.
Right, especially against the what Tampa Bay can do on the power play, right? I don't think you're going to be able to hold them to an 0 for every single game, but throwing Andrew Cogliano back out there is definitely going to help because that's what he brings, right? Of course, he's got energy, and anytime the fourth line's out there, he does good things, but his biggest tool is his penalty killing, and having him back out there is going to be huge. But with his insertion, somebody has to come out. What are we looking at before we head to the break here?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be Nicholas Abe-Kubel. He, according to Peter Baugh, The Athletic, he played the fewest minutes in Game 1. I didn't go back and check myself, but I did notice at morning skate today he was running penalty kill scenarios with Jason Megna, who has been a scratch for a bit here during the postseason now. So that seemed like a pretty strong indicator. You got a guy like Alex Newhook playing pretty well, so it's kind of hard to sit a guy like that. So I would expect Cogliano to slot into the fourth line, probably be used pretty sparingly alongside Nico Sturm. And then on the third line, you've got Darren Helm filling in for J2 Compher, who's moved up into that cadre slot.
Yep, Abe-Kubel played the least out of all the forwards at 6 minutes, 7 seconds, 0 shots, 2 hits, 2 blocks. So not an amazing game. Definitely somebody can jump in there and maybe create a little bit more noise, right?
And he might be nursing an injury. I can't think of the exact play now, but I did see something during the game that led me to think, you know, maybe he's going to need a couple days.
I remember him blocking a shot in the Edmonton series that I think kept him out for a day or so. But yeah, that'll do it for this portion. We're getting to Jesse Montano next to break down the Avalanche side of things with us. You know, he hasn't missed a game, that guy. Wild. Road or home. He's been at every single one. So we're going to talk to him next. Stick around through the break. This is the Hockey Show right here on Mile High Sports. We talk all things hockey. JJ Jerez, Ryan Bolden, Coach Bailey behind the glass. We'll be right back.
Now, I got the gun. You got the boo. You got two choices of what you can do. It's not a tough decision that you can
Right now, it's 16 minutes past the big hour. Is that not right, Mr. Scream? Great, good stuff. I think people are getting really cranked.
And we're back. Colorado's biggest and best live hockey radio show right here on My Sports. JJ Jerez, Ryan Bolding. We're heading to the phones to our man of the DNVR team over there, Jesse Montano. We've been hanging out with him a lot. Jesse, I commented before the break here how you haven't missed a single game in these playoffs. Are you exhausted? Are you still exhilarated? How has it been keeping up with every single game, road or away, or road or home?
Yeah, no, it's I'm getting tired, but when it flipped over to the Stanley Cup final, it did re-energize me a bit. But I've talked to you guys about it. That second trip back to St. Louis, I was running on fumes on that one. But no, dude, it's been a blast, and the way the Avs are playing, I mean, it's great hockey to watch every night, and you know, that's why we do this, right? To watch great hockey. So it's been fun. It's been tiring, but you're covering a Stanley Cup final. You don't know how many times, you know, the way the players talk about it. Don't know how many times you get to play in it. You don't know when the next time is you'll get to cover a Stanley Cup final or a team on a cup run. So it's been fun.
Right. We're hoping from our standpoint we get to cover more, but we're enjoying this one for what it is. Jesse, looking at the Avs right now and what they've done so far in this playoff run, how do you feel they stack as, because, you know, coming into the playoffs, we knew this was a healthy team. They were about to play some of the best hockey we've seen from them all year. Putting the playoffs in a vacuum, are they playing their best hockey now, or when in the playoffs do you think they were buzzing?
I mean, I think you have to look at that Edmonton series and say that that's where you really start to see them ramp it up. I mean, I thought they were surgical against Nashville. St. Louis, you know, definitely pushed them. But, I mean, look, to go on a run like they're on right now, you have to have some luck, and you have to be playing your best hockey at the right time of year. And it looks like this group is really starting to gel together. Like you just said, JJ, like coming into this postseason, they were fully healthy. They are not fully healthy right now. They've been missing two major pieces off their roster for weeks now. Sam Girard goes down in the Blues series. Nazem Kadri obviously goes down in game three of the Edmonton series. You've now been without Andrew Cogliano for a couple games, and they just keep chugging along. So, I mean, I don't think it's any secret, any surprise to anyone that, look, I think this is the best hockey we've seen them play all year. This is the most consistent hockey we've seen them play all year. And this may be the most cohesive that this group has looked all season. Injuries, anything that's kind of been thrown their way, they just keep chugging along.
I think one of the most interesting things about how the Avalanche are performing at this level at this point in time is that you could have a game where, you know, Nathan MacKinnon isn't really doing much, where Kale McCarr isn't really doing much. You have the main guys not getting on the score sheet, but you have the support players, you know, the Val Nichushkins, the Andre Burakovskis, the Arturi Lehkonens, filling in the gap. And that's kind of the sign of a good team, right? That these guys who aren't your day-to-day goal scorers can pick up the slack when the other guys are getting shut down. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on how they've played and just how important is Val Nichushkin to this team?
Well, so I guess let's start there. I mean, he comes in, you know, three, 4 years ago now on like a league minimum deal, coming back from the KHL, just trying to find a home in the National Hockey League again. Is really effective in the Avs' bottom six. And I swear, it seems like every time over the last 4 years, Val Nichushkin has stepped on the ice, he's gotten better. And now it's all the way elevated to the point where he is a first-line winger. I mean, you guys have heard it. I've lost track of the amount of national media that have asked about Val Nichushkin in media availability with Jared Bednar. Everybody's kind of starting to understand just how good this guy is. I mean, huge, huge body, an absolute workhorse. He's got speed. He's got some finish. And his forecheck, his puck pursuit is on another level right now. But no, Ryan, to answer your question about how important it is to have this depth, look, you hear guys say it all the time, right, in the cliche saying in sports is next man up. It has been someone different for the Avs almost every single night. Pick a guy, right? JT Compher, Arturi Lehkonen, Darren Helm, Val Nichushkin, Mikko Rantanen. And then you Kale McCarr, Nathan MacKinnon. It's been someone different almost every night. I go back to game six of round two when I'm talking to people about this run. It was two goals from JT Compher and a goal from Darren Helm to win it. Jared Bednar is very comfortable rolling his bottom six, his fourth line in big minutes. In crunch time. And look, that is a sign of a great team. Jared Bednar talked about it earlier this year. I believe it was when the Penguins were in town and someone asked him, why were you rolling all four lines down to just a couple minutes left? And he said, look, we were playing a team that rolls all four lines. If you're playing a team that rolls all four lines and you can't do it, you are going to have some problems. Jared Bednar has felt very comfortable rolling all 12 forwards for the entire game, and it's led to some favorable matchups for them down the stretch, you know, down late in third period. It's led to them having some fresher legs later in games. It's been absolutely massive, and that's part of the reason why I think you can say this is the best hockey this team has played all year, because they are getting that depth contribution, seems like, every single night.
I believe that was JJ's question, my partner in crime over here.
100.
Yeah, I was going to say, dating back to my time still with the Avalanche, which feels like a decade ago now, I had a conversation with Semyon Varlamov when he was recovering from hip surgery and he was riding the bike at the practice rink. And we were talking about Val Nichushkin, and he was coming back to the NHL from the KHL. And Varlamov was saying he couldn't believe that a guy like Val would leave the best league in the world to go play in Russia and risk his career, because, you know, it's so hard to make the NHL that you may never make it back to the NHL. And I think a lot of people gave up on Val, and now this guy's about to get paid. And part of the reason for that is his forecheck. And I think that's what really stymied Tampa, at least early in the game, and maybe a little bit later in the third period, was the Avalanche's speed on the forecheck. I'm just curious what you're seeing from that. And throughout the whole postseason, it seems like that's really been the Avs' bread and butter.
Oh, 100%. And, like, look, so if you go all the way back to the Nashville series, right, what was kind of the talking points heading into that series? Ooh, Nashville's going to give Colorado all they can handle because they're going to really slow them down and play physical. They're going to try to slow them down. Well, obviously, the Avs sweep that 4-0. You head into the second round against St. Louis, and it was the same thing. Oh, this is a big physical team. They're going to be slowing the Avs down, getting physical, getting, you know, in their faces. Series went 6. It was a fun little series back and forth, but I think everyone would kind of agree, and the advanced metrics would support this, that the Avs were really in control of that series for the majority of the time. Edmonton, everyone knew it was kind of going to be a track meet, right? But what makes the Avs so difficult to slow down, the reason why Nashville and St. Louis couldn't do it, and to your point, Ryan, the reason that Tampa even looked a little kind of thrown by it early in that game, the Avs don't just play with speed off the rush. They play with speed on the forecheck. They pursue pucks like crazy. They play with speed coming back into their own end. It's just been relentless, and you could see it. Even Victor Hedman, the great Victor Hedman, I mean, was struggling to get pucks up and out, was struggling to get a couple feet of space to make a play coming out of his own zone. And you nailed it. Like, that has been the Avs' bread and butter all season long. It's what they've been building towards. It's really hard to mount a good offensive attack when you don't have the puck, and that's kind of been the Avs' goal. The best defense is having the puck on your own stick and not letting the other team, really get any looks. There were multiple games in the Western Conference Final where Connor McDavid was kind of a ghost, and the biggest reason was he just didn't have the puck on his stick very much. The Avs getting in on that forecheck, using their speed to cause problems down low below the goal line has been a massive problem for teams in these playoffs. And we'll see tonight if Tampa can make some adjustments to try to combat that. Because if you can't get up and out of your zone, the Avs have a forecheck and can strike quickly enough off the transition that you're going to be in some trouble if you can't get that puck up and out.
We've heard a million times from the Avalanche players in these last couple of weeks about playing to their identity. I think you just broke down what their identity looks like to a T there. Of course, this is the Hockey Show with JJ and Ryan. We're talking to Jesse Montano of DNVR. I wanted to get into Andrei Burakovsky next, right? This is a guy that I think during these playoffs, he's been in and out of the lineup, a little bit of injury, a little bit due to production. But in game one, gets back onto a second line, gets that overtime goal, kind of a roll of the dice by Jared Bednar there. I guess, what do you think he's seeing out of Burakovsky to kind of give him this last chance at playing with the top six?
Yeah, so, you know, man, Burakovsky's such an interesting guy. I don't know if I've ever seen someone who maybe rides the wave of confidence as much as Burakovsky does. I mean, when that dude's feeling it, I've said it before, I think he's got a top five release in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just an unbelievable shot, and he can put it pretty much wherever he wants it. If you remember the game here in Denver against Florida the Panthers earlier this year. He scored a hat trick, and he honestly has kind of took that game over with his skill. He has that game-breaking ability where he can have a terrible game, and then the puck's on his stick in the third period, and he can just blow it by the best in the league. So I think that's kind of what Bednar is looking for out of him. And look, you have to give Bednar a little bit of credit. He's had, you know, before the injuries started rolling in, he's had some flexibility with his lineup. And every time he's plugged someone in, whether it be Newhook, Burakovsky, you know, Abe Kubel earlier in these playoffs, every time he's plugged someone in, they've had an impact in that first game. So there is something that they are doing that is getting those guys motivated, getting them ready. I also think, you know, these guys who are cycling into the lineup, they understand it's a competition and they need to be putting their best foot forward to stay in the lineup. And the other thing too, JJ, is Andre Burakovsky is one of the few Avs that not only has Stanley Cup final experience, but has a ring. He won with the Washington Capitals a couple of years ago, scored a big goal in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Lightning to help get the Caps there. I think some teams can maybe overvalue the experience part of it, but it does mean something. You know, when you're going up against a two-time champ, nothing Tampa is going to see in this series is going to throw them. So having someone who has been through that grind and has had to close out a team in the Stanley Cup final, I don't think that's ever a bad thing, and especially when you have a guy with that, like I said, just game-breaking ability to put the puck in the net. Scoring goals in the NHL is one of the hardest things in pro sports to do. If you have a guy on your roster that can score an easy goal for you, it's never a bad idea to give him a shot.
And I think we saw that experience in Game 1, right? Andre Burakovsky definitely looked like he was playing at another level. He found a different gear there.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. And again, that's just one of those things where there aren't many people who you can just plug into the lineup in a Stanley Cup final. And keep in mind, like you said, he has been dealing with some injury stuff as well, you know, blocking a shot earlier in these playoffs. So maybe he's not quite at 100%.
Yeah, he's got maintenance days. Yep.
Yep. Him and Landy have been doing that regularly. So, you know, you maybe assume he's not quite at 100%. And yeah, has he had some maybe effort issues in this playoffs? I don't necessarily know if I want to say that. But I think you're right. You could tell, hey, look, I've been here before. I've done this. And he's out there and he scores the overtime winner, which is, again, that's all you need. He needs one chance. He's that kind of shooter. And if he feels comfortable in a cup final game and you feel you can get the puck on his stick, I like him being in the lineup. I don't see any reason why you'd pull him out unless the leg injury really started bothering him to the point where he couldn't go.
Right on, Jesse. Well, thanks for giving us some of your time this Saturday. Have fun tonight. And I look forward to covering the rest of the series with you. And our time in Tampa Bay is about to be a blast, huh?
Dude, no, I can't wait. Looking forward to it. Yeah, we're going to have a great time out there. I always love chatting with you guys. Anytime you guys ever need, just let me know. Happy to jump on.
Right on. Thanks again. You have it. Jesse Montano, I mean, knows his stuff.
We'll have to have him on more.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a small handful of guys in that press box that I think have the hockey IQ to hang with it, with you and I. Jesse's definitely one of them.
So. I don't know if I have a hockey IQ, but he's definitely up there.
All right. Was going to say Burakovsky. I meant more me than you, but yeah.
Burakovsky is a guy that left Washington because he wanted a bigger role. He wanted a top six role. And you can see to a degree how he falls off when he's not getting those big time minutes too. It's not just confidence, it's opportunity and playing with quality line mates too.
Yep. I think I noticed that early from his tenure here. He plays better with McKinnon, but he just isn't consistent enough to keep him with a guy like McKinnon, right? So I think the second line is a good spot for him. We'll see how he does tonight there and if he is able to stick there throughout the rest of the series. But we'll be right back. We're getting to Ken Wiebe on the other side of Sportsnet.ca. He's been hanging out in Denver. We've been rubbing some shoulders with him, getting to know him. Really knows his stuff. You know, if we're talking about hockey IQ, you know, any of the Canadian pundits up there definitely have us beat. So
the top.
We'll
the
get
pinnacle.
To him next. Thanks for hanging out with us so far. We'll be right back on the other side with Ken Wiebe. This is the Hockey Show. JJ Derez, Ryan Boulding, Mile High Sports. Same old, same old.
We'll be right back. Let's go, Colorado!
And we're back. Colorado's biggest and best live hockey radio show right here on My Sports. JJ Derez, Ryan Boulding. We're going right back to the phones. Power play two here. We're getting another man advantage. We're bringing Ken Weeb, writer of Sportsnet.ca and the Pro Hockey Writers Association chair of Winnipeg. He's been here covering the entire series so far. He was here on Media Day, so it's been a few days. He spent some time here in Denver. So, Ken, thanks for hanging out with us. And how have you enjoyed Denver so far during these playoffs?
Oh, tremendous. Yeah, it was a real treat to be here for the Western Conference Final, and this is my first Stanley Cup Final since 2011. So a real treat to be back in the building, seeing a lot of great people, and I feel like I've almost been here long enough that I can be an honorable or Denverite or whatever you guys call yourselves here.
The non-locals call them natives, and we got stickers, so we can pick you up a native sticker to take home with you.
Perfect. I'm on board.
Yeah, he's been here about just as long as half of Denver anyway, right? So a lot of implants here. Transplants, not implants.
There might be a lot of implants here. I don't know.
Ken, we're going to stick with the Tampa Bay side of things with you. We just kind of really went in depth on the Avalanche. So considering game one, and I think going into this series, a lot of us were keeping in mind Tampa Bay is great at adjustments, right? That's what they've been so good at for years and what's gotten them to this level. Do you think they'll be able to adjust accordingly here for game two to make this maybe a little more in their favor? Or how do you feel the Avalanche talent compares to what Tampa Bay could possibly adjust to?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both, to be honest. In talking to a lot of our friends out east, I think that I wouldn't say they underestimated the Avalanche, but I've been using the term warp speed when describing how the Avalanche play. When they're on their game and quote-unquote, getting to their identity, as Jared Bednar likes to say, they just play at another level. And even the Edmonton Oilers, who have probably the fastest player on skates, especially with the puck in his stick, they made the Oilers look slow. And in game one, the Avalanche made the Lightning look slow on a lot of occasions. I do think they'll find ways to slow them down. I don't think they can slow them down completely. I think they'll try to be a little bit more physical. And I think, too, they'll be a little bit more adjusted to the altitude and all those things. I think what we saw in game one, even guys like Victor Hedman, perennial Norris finalist, he struggled a bit with the pace. I think he'll be much better in game two. You won't see many nights where Victor Hedman turns the puck over twice on a single shift and it ended up in the back of the net on that occasion. And it'll be interesting. I think that the Lightning have more to give, but you guys, I think you'd agree. I think the Avalanche, they played well in game one, but I don't think that was peak performance from the Avalanche either. So the whole cat and mouse and back and forth game will be very interesting. What I do think in terms of the Lightning, though, specifically, Braden Point, I expect him. I think he was fine under the circumstances, guys. He hadn't played since round one. I thought he moved okay, but I think there was a little more gliding to his game. We saw him at the practice the day before. He was buzzing around, but it's tough to be buzzing around when you haven't played in almost 2 months. So he was effective, but he didn't have any shots on goal. And he's the driver for their offensive bust in a similar manner to how Nate MacKinnon drives for the Avalanche. So I expect him to be better. And also, I thought it was a little bit of a quiet game for Steven Stamkos, the Lightning captain. Not as involved offensively as we would expect. And even Nikita Kucherov, he had a, all-world highlight reel special, something you don't see often. See Taves and Makar get beaten. But I didn't think he was at peak performance either. Andre Palat was one of their better forwards, but they're kind of grinding guys down the lineup. I would expect to see a little bit more from the Alex Killorns of the world. And I didn't really like Brandon Hagel's game much either. Yes, maybe he's dealing with the flu. And it was a tough go for Anthony Cirelli, guys. We talked about this, the matchup. I mean, would Jared and Bednar embrace the head-to-head with Nathan MacKinnon as he has going up against Ryan O'Reilly and Connor McDavid previously? He did. I mean, they didn't go to it full-time, but he wasn't afraid of it. And that line got kind of caved in when it came to the analytics in game one. I would expect Cirelli to be much better in game two as well.
Kenny, you covered pretty much everybody. And so I'm going to go to the back of the back end here.
Yeah.
And say, I saw a statistic that said if the stats trended the way they are and the Avalanche were to win the series, Darcy Kuemper and Pavel Francouz could have the worst save percentage of a tandem in the postseason. Now, on the other end, since we're kind of talking Tampa here, Vasilevsky only gets better as time goes on. You know, that was his worst first period of a playoff game in his career, and he still recovered to force the game into overtime. How does he have more to give here? Like, how does Vasilevsky change the dynamic of this series?
Sure, for sure. The thing for me, Vasilevsky was good after the first period. Actually, in fact, he was probably excellent. And there were even times in the first period when there could have been an extension of those two-goal leads, but he made some big saves. But, you know, if you're the Avalanche, you need, if Andrei Vasilevsky gives up at least one softie and one on the softer side, you need to win that hockey game, because he's not going to give up many muffins in this series. So, to me, obviously, Vasilevsky's bounce-back numbers are exceptional. What, 17-1 in his last 18 after a loss, that lone loss coming last round to the New York Rangers in Game 2. He's going to get better, but I think that he's going to be seeing high volume and high quality as we continue to go. Obviously, I'm sure you talked about it with JJ earlier. I don't see another scenario where Cale Makar and Devon Toews go without a shot on goal. They were still very, you know, involved in the offense. I think the second wave opportunities are something Tampa's going to have trouble with, and I would include Bo Byram in that group, guys. I thought Bo Byram was exceptional in Game 1 in terms of his risk-reward element, but being involved and using his legs to help on that secondary wave of offensive attack while not putting himself in a situation where he could be caught defensively. And that's something I think that Tampa's going to try to adjust to. They have to be more aware of the second wave coming from the back end. But I also love the way the Avalanche really worked them down low. We don't really think of them. We think of the Avalanche as a rush team, but they spent a lot of offensive zone time because they kept, you know, getting pucks in behind the goal line and really kind of making the Lightning defensemen turn. They're going to have to be a little bit, they're going to have to get back to pucks quicker and be a little bit more efficient in terms of their zone exits. Just one quick thing on Makar. I mean, he didn't get a point on the play, but his ability to read and seal down on Andre Palat on the Nichushkin goal, the goal doesn't happen without that play, and it doesn't show up in the score sheet. If you're a casual fan and you maybe didn't see the game or the highlights, you're like, oh, well, you know, not as involved. Well, Makar was involved on that play, and Andre Palat is one of the best guys along the boards of the NHL. So that was one thing. I think the Lightning will be a little bit more prepared for those aggressive pinches by the Avalanche defense. But the one thing that you guys know, too, the reason they can make those pinches and those reads is because the F3, the high forward, really does a great job of backfilling so that it's not going to be a 2-on-1, even if they don't win the race for that pinch along the boards.
100%. We're talking to Ken Weeb here on the Hockey Show, JJ Jerez and Ryan Boulding. I want to stick with Cale Makar there. Like you said, he was held to zero shots on goal in Game 1. He averages just above three. We saw this happen to him in the St. Louis series as well. He was dominant in Nashville and Edmonton. But what do you see from Tampa Bay? How are they keeping a guy like Cale Makar at bay? And what did the Avalanche have to do to get his shots to the net?
Yeah, it's super interesting. I don't even really think they kept him at bay, to be honest. I still thought that Makar was one of the most effective players on the ice in terms of his ability to get back to pucks and get the puck moving north. Yes, the Lightning did a great job of getting into those shot lanes and maybe having that second layer of shot blockers that he had to get by, but I still found Cale Makar to have a solid game. I mean, would he say he had a little bit more to give? Sure. And, you know, would he have liked that play back? Maybe he kind of, like he said himself yesterday, he kind of got caught, I wouldn't say napping, but it was like that one momentary lapse where he kind of, I think he was just flat out surprised that Toews got beat on the play, and he just sort of lost his awareness on Palat for that brief second. But I don't really think that they kept him at bay. 9 shot attempts is a very involved game. Now, we know John Cooper talked about going up against Adam Fox and how that maybe helped prepare them for Makar, but Makar is at a completely different skating level when it comes to Adam Fox, with all due respect to Adam Fox. Makar's just much more explosive. I don't see the Lightning being able to keep him in check, whether that's at 5-on-5 or on the power play, which, as we know, especially during that 5-on-3, it was a bit of a shooting gallery there, and Makar was very much a big factor there in terms of his puck movement and ability to get pucks in the right kind of lanes. But, I mean, you have to give the Lightning credit. They did do a good job of keeping him kind of in check as terms of the score sheet. But John Cooper said himself yesterday, if you think that Cale Makar is going to be held without a shot very often, that's on you, because they don't expect to be able to keep him contained throughout this whole series. But they'll do their best, and they'll have to kind of keep him in check if they want to win the series.
Kenny, I'm curious your thoughts on this. A little bit has been made out of the path to Tampa's three Stanley, or potentially three Stanley Cup championships, their last two. All credit to them to put themselves in the position to win and where they are now, but some people have said this is the strongest opponent they've faced in the Stanley Cup final in the last 3 years. They obviously get Dallas in the bubble, and then they get a Montreal team that may have been overmatched last time. I'm just curious your thoughts on that idea and if this is maybe the hardest test and if they're, you know, up to the challenge.
Yeah, I think they're up to the challenge, and I wouldn't discount either one of those opponents. I mean, I was in the bubble just for the qualifying round, but was able to see Dallas a lot that year, given the fact they play in the Central Division that we all cover here. That was a good team. They didn't score much, but you know, they were full marks getting there. And in terms of last year, I mean, I cover the series of Jets and Canadians. The Jets were a fairly heavy favorite, but Carey Price got hot, and they were they were able to exact such a physical toll on their opponents, especially with their back end, whether it's Shea Weber or Ben Chiarot or a Joel Edmondson, and even Jeff Petrie is a big, strong guy. He's not a, you know, bone crushing hitter, but those teams had good players. But are they at the level that the Colorado Avalanche are at? I mean, I think it's fair to say the Avalanche would be the cream of the crop when it comes to the three opponents. But let's not discount the fact that even this year alone, Tampa Bay had to eliminate the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had to eliminate the President's Trophy winning Florida Panthers. And then they got pushed by the New York Rangers, who have one of the better goaltenders in the NHL. So I don't think this is fool's gold when we come to Tampa Bay, guys. I mean, I know that's not what you're saying, Ryan, but they've had a tough road to get here, and they're a very good hockey team, but does that mean that they can win the series and make it a three-peat, man? I mean, it's interesting because you guys know the heartache that the Avalanche have suffered to get to this point also. A lot of people talking it's vintage 1980s Oilers versus Islanders. We just don't know if it's 1983 or 1984 here. So I'm very curious to see how the bounce back or the pushback is in game two. To be honest, I love the way the Avalanche are playing, but as a fan of hockey and great storylines, I'm going to get in trouble. I know which station I'm on. A Lightning win would provide some tension in this series, but if you're the Avalanche, there is a massive opportunity here. And not to say that an 0-2 hole for the Lightning is insurmountable, but if you're the Avalanche, you can really, really start planting that seed of doubt if you come out and take care of business on home ice again on Saturday night.
Hey, no pom-poms here. We love the unbiased analysis. I liked your breakdown of Bowen Byram, right? I saw the same thing. He was definitely below the Tampa Bay goal line a few times, getting extra aggressive. I think you look at Tampa Bay, they have a similar guy, maybe not quite as aggressive offensively, but you look at Mikhail Sergachev, and on paper, he's on the third line defensive group, but you look at the time on ice and the usage, he's in the top three. So what kind of impact can Mikhail Sergachev have? I mean, we saw him score a goal in game one. Should the Avalanche fans expect this guy to be a game breaker game in, game out?
Well, he has the ability to be, right? So Sergachev is an interesting player. I mean, he had the important play, but he also had the unforced error on the overtime winner. I mean, that was a play where he was not really under pressure, and he kind of just high-flipped it into the neutral zone, and then Compher picked it up, and they just had that. They came at the Lightning in waves, and I know it's a very good parallel because, you know, Sergachev does start in the third pairing, but when the game gets into the guts of the game, I mean, he's playing with Victor Hedman at times, similar to how Byram kind of slides up with Josh Manson, depending on the situational awareness. But he can have an impact. I don't think he's quite as dynamic necessarily as Bowen Byram. And I would also say Byram, even though he's such a young player and has, you know, a little bit, you know, less experience than Sergachev, Byram's a better defender right now at his stage of his career. So that's always been the thing about Sergachev. He's a little bit of an inconsistent player. He can be streaky. He gets a little bit hot, but he can get frazzled at times in the defensive zone. And I think that would be one thing that we would look for from the Avalanche again tonight. I think they're going to dump the puck into his corner quite a bit. He's a guy that he's not afraid to mix it up, but I think the tenacity of the forecheck for the Avalanche, especially a guy like Logan O'Connor in game one, really used his speed to be effective. And he was one of the big reasons that they were able to get those turnovers and had the Lightning a little bit discombobulated in the defensive zone.
Last one for me, Kenny. I want to take a 10-mile view here and ask you. You've been in the press conferences. You've been watching the games. You're around. What is nobody talking about that you think should be a bigger storyline, or what are we missing here?
Yeah, it's super interesting, guys. I mean, for me, I mean, because I dug in so hard on the Jared Bednar feature, I mean, that's one of the things in talking to my colleagues. Jared is very, you know, very straightforward on the podium. You guys know he's a funny guy, but he sort of is like where John Cooper was in 2015, you know, that first kind of crack to the final. A little bit, I wouldn't use the word stiff because Jared is very composed, but he doesn't really show his personality in the same way. John has been here so many times now. that he's often having a little bit more fun with the media. But then there's some pushback, like yesterday, you know, like John is a guy who he's great at the podium. He is a great orator, but he's not a snake oil salesman. Like, this guy is a legit bright guy. He can break down the game and he loves talking about it. That to me is an interesting part. There's been a little bit of back and forth, and, you know, even like a little subtle shot that John Cooper took towards Jared Bednar, saying, oh, we're not here to hide our lineup. And don't we already know who's the starting goalie, even when he didn't want to. So it's not like the old days where the coaches used to take like flat out verbal shots at one another, but there's a little bit of psychological warfare at times that happens at the podium. And I think that, and also too, some of that with John is sort of to take some of the heat off his players after a game where they didn't play very well. So I really love watching both coaches. I love talking to both of them. They're both incredibly articulate and insightful. It's just John is a little bit more forthcoming at this stage of his career. But, you know, being around Jared a little bit now for the last few rounds and knowing his backstory, I think he'll get more and more comfortable in those scenarios. I'm not saying he's going to be up there cracking jokes all the time, but I think he's an incredibly bright hockey mind. And I think that the Avalanche fans, I'm pretty sure they know how lucky they are to have him around. But man, oh man, this is a guy who's, we know, going into the series, the biggest thing was talking about was the goaltending matchup. And the second biggest people thought, well, John Cooper has been, you know, leaving coaches in his wake in terms of in-game adjustments. But man, oh man, I think John is he's one of the best coaches. He's the best coach in the NHL right now, but Jared has, you know, narrowed the gap significantly. And he's matching wits with him both on and off the ice so far. And it's been fun to watch and fun to see.
Thanks, Ken. You mentioned that your Bednar article. I just want to shout it out and make sure any Avalanche fan listening checks this article out. It's great. It's very in-depth. I dare say it may have made the local media look a little bad because it was so good from someone not from here. So kudos to you.
Kind of you to say. Lots of great work being done by the Denver media as well. Happy to see it. And it's been fun to get to know a lot of the media guys like yourselves during this run. And look forward to seeing how long it lasts and enjoying as many games as we can here.
Yep. Thanks so much for your time, Ken. We'll see you tonight. Very generous.
My pleasure. Enjoy the day, guys. Appreciate it.
You too. Thanks.
There you have it. Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet.ca confirmed. Jared Bednar is not just a Ken doll, but actually a really good hockey mind, right?
Somebody get the Denver Post on the line. Ken doll with a brain.
But that's what's been so great is these two coaches are both hockey geniuses. I love hearing them both break down the X's and O's. I mean, it's truly been a treat and everything we could ask for out of a final.
Yeah, it's super enjoyable. Like Ken said, John Cooper is obviously much more comfortable at the podium through all the time he has spent in the limelight, and he does a good job of deflecting and diffusing situations, but he also does a good job of, you know, taking little jokes and taking shots and developing rapport with people he sees frequently in the media. And you know, I find myself sometimes kind of mesmerized at his press conferences. Just like, this is so good. I wish I could talk to this guy for an hour.
That first one on Media Day with him and Julian Breezeball, right? It was a stand-up show for a little while. They were cracking three or four jokes. But yeah, we're up against this, so we got to get out of here. We got one more quick little segment to get to since we ran long on our interviews, but fantastic interviews. So again, another thank you to Ken Wiebe and Jesse Montana. We'll be right back to wrap the show up here on The Hockey Show. JJ Jerez, Ryan Bolden, Coach Bailey behind the glass, Mile High Sports. Feels so unlike everybody else alone, in spite of the fact that some people still think that they know, but no.
I play hockey and I fornicate because it's the two most fun things in cold weather.
Yeah, ending the show nice and smooth, nice and calm before the storm, right?
This makes me want some Ocean Spray cranberry juice cocktail.
Oh, I love how memes, they blow up for about 25 minutes and then everybody completely forgets about it. But yeah, longboard would be in order as well, right?
Gabe Landeskog did this in an ad for Coors Light, I think, that was on his social media where he was skating.
I think Bud Light.
Evergreen, whatever, they're all light beers, it's the same. If I said to you, Grizz, would you think Pride Month event or local area DJ?
Oh, I know who Grizz is, but I would think a can of chewing tobacco.
That's, yeah, Kodiak?
No, Grizz. Grizzly. JT Confer's favorite
Did you know Grizz prior to the press release coming out from the Avalanche.
I did know, Grizz. Unfortunately, the circle of friends I have are very into the EDM scene, and I'm not particularly, but Grizz is a name I've heard.
So you knew about the self-proclaimed good vibes rainbow boy that's a beacon of positivity, where his reflective nature and fun-loving attitude are mirrored in his unmistakable electronic creations, each their own serotonin-fueled gateway to a bona fide good time.
I didn't know that much about him, no.
Yep. Well, anyway, Grizz will be performing at the Tivoli Watch Party area prior to tonight's game. So if you're a big EDM fan, bring your day glow, because it's going to be daylight out, and your lollipops and extra water, and have a good time.
That's my dubstep impression. I think what they're doing for these watch parties and going outside the box and getting an EDM DJ, I think that it's been great, right? I mean, you saw how many people were actually at the Tivoli watch party. I was super impressed by that. Way to go, Denver, because it was the first time we've done something like that here, and they showed up in droves. Then you saw the McGregor Square watch party. Looked just as fun. I think watch parties are going to be a big thing here when the Avs go on the road, and Denver's here for it, right? We love championships in this city. Call Denver a city of bandwagon fans, because we might be, but hey, when the championships are here, people show up, and they show up with the team colors on and smiles on their faces.
And you're going to be on the road at those games, so you won't be at the watch parties. Like Jesse talked about, he's tired. I'm tired. My watch party is going to be in my PJs on the couch for games 3 and 4.
I don't blame you. How about that crowd in game one, though? I think they really showed up. Not a surprise. Again, we come in droves, especially during championship years. Colorado Avalanche have a fond spot in this city's heart. So I wasn't surprised to see them show up, but they were loud, they were engaged, and just put on a good show and made the city of Denver look good as hockey fans.
I didn't realize we had that many rich people.
Young people
who could afford to go to those games. And predictably, as it should have been, probably the best All the Small Things sing-along we've had this year, with the exception of the lazy-ass cheering, clapping, patting on the back during the na-na-na-na-na-na-na part that nobody seems capable of singing. I'm disappointed every time.
It seems like there's a common understanding that once the na-na-na-na-na's come, it stops. And I know that's been driving you crazy since the genesis of this thing. So if you want to get that off your chest, go for it. But I just think it's understood stadium wide that's where it ends.
It's stuck on my chest right now. They had Mark Hoppus introduce the video, and I missed what he said, but that was awesome. Mark Hoppus is the bass player and one of the lead singers of Blink-182, and I want Mark Hoppus to chime in and like help them out with the number of na-na-na's, and let's get the crowd to do it, like do the song. There are more words than just "work sucks." I know.
I mean, Grizz is a great pull, right? But what if they were able to bring in Blink-182 just to do one song?
I said this months ago. If Blink-182 isn't performing at the parade,
fail.
Everybody's fired.
No, I think everybody's done a great job, though. I think the city of Denver has really shown up for the Stanley Cup final and just proves that this is a hockey town when you need it to be.
Sorry, Detroit. There's a new hockey town in town.
That'll do it for today's episode. We got a game to go catch today. Game 2. Let's get your predictions before we head out the door here.
You're a fool. A prediction? I guess I'm going to predict that Tampa wins.
I don't think you're crazy there.
3-2.
I'm sticking with my under, just like the matinee pick. Under 6 goals it was today, and that was at a -105. I like it. So yeah, everybody enjoy game 2.
Who are you picking to win? You don't get to just say under.
Yeah, I do. That's my prediction. I'm taking the under.
This guy, Danny. Get out of here.
I'll be in Tampa Bay, so look out for all my content and everything coming next week. Thanks to everybody who's participated in what I've put out there so far. Same thing with Ryan. I know he's done a lot of work and a lot of good content out there, bringing you guys closer to the team you guys love. So enjoy game 2 and enjoy 3 and 4, and we'll be back next week. Hopefully there's still hockey to be had, right? Because game 5 is supposed to be Friday. Hopefully we're not done then, because I love the hockey show. I love the Stanley Cup Finals, and I hate how fast it's flying before
our
eyes.
Let's go to game 7. Let's do it.
Overtime. Game 7, Jack Johnson goal.
Oh,
that'll
the way the season started is the way the season ended.
Exactly. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us here on the hockey show. We'll catch you next week.
Enjoy Grizz.
For Ryan, I'm JJ. See you later. To take me home.